Hello and welcome to episode 179 of the Rusty Quill Gaming Podcast. I'm your host and GM, Alex Newell. With me today, I have...
Ben Meredith.
Bryn Monroe.
Lydia Nicholas.
And Helen Gould.
And who are you playing?
Zolf Smith.
Hamid Salah Harun Al-Tahan.
Sel Sidebottom.
And Azu.
And we are going to be picking up from what might be the first natural break in a long time, both in-game and out of it, where it's just like, here's a breath. Interesting. I'm immediately out of my comfort zone and I'm going to be struggling. So we'll see. I might blow something up to help, you know, settle myself down.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, you... you see, now this is going to sound like a joke. You all get to, should you wish, go to sleep. We will be rejoining the next morning.
Where are we sleeping?
You basically have been offered some shared accommodation should you want them. However, there's openly been said that there's effectively a bunkhouse for people who need like somewhere temporary to sleep. But they've also said that you would all be welcome in like family share stuff. But if you did, you would have to split up because no one has enough living space for everyone in one place. There's just too many of you.
Yeah, it's a lot of us.
So there's the offer of like a family share, like that's fine. There's a bunkhouse which does just about have enough space for everyone. Technically, you could retreat to the ship, I guess, if you were wanting that sense of security, but obviously it's not in the best condition, but you could probably sleep there as well.
Bunkhouse it is.
Yeah.
That's fine. Is anyone choosing not to sleep?
Yes, I am sitting next to Wild's bed, reading.
Understood. Could everyone else please give me a will save? This is not a joke.
Of course.
Ha, the trick is to never sleep again.
Ben's rumbled me. This is why your ability to remove fatigue is the worst thing ever.
I'll never sleep again.
15.
15.
13.
22.
Understood. Thank you.
Chonky will.
You all sleep well.
Aww.
And I'm going to say you sleep dreamless sleeps as well. Deep, deep and dreamless sleeps.
Yay.
In which case, then, I am going to start with Zolf. I'm actually going to start prior to the dawn, just to be a little bit weird with it and go back on myself, just because I see an opportunity for drama, darling. I'd say in the early pre-dawn hours, you see Wild stir ever so slightly. I'm going to assume that you are sat next to his bed if you wanted to be there for the moment.
Yeah, I'm assuming with the bunkhouse there's like a gap to push a chair up to like next to the pillows.
Reading a book or something?
Oh, yes. Reading a Campbell.
Oh, yes.
Which Campbell?
Let's go back to an old favourite. I think I'm reading When Passions Collide for like the 23rd time.
Aww.
You see Wild stir comfortably and then... open his eyes slowly, blink and look around.
Hey.
Hey, Zolf. How are we doing?
Fine. How about you?
Yeah, I'm all right, actually.
Do you know what happened?
I remember a lot. But I don't know. Not really, no.
Okay. Everyone else is asleep, so I need you to promise not to, like, yell or anything. Tell you what. Let's go outside. Have a chat.
Yeah, all right.
Is Wild's hair white?
Oh, yeah, pure white. Pure white.
Very nice. Also, I must congratulate you on the lovely new fashion statement you've made.
Oh, which one?
Well, you've obviously noticed how good I look and have taken the... they say that, mimicry is the greatest form of flattery, so... And I'll pick, like, a mirror off a side table or something and show him.
Wild sort of has a look.
Other thing, has his scar gone?
Yes.
Yeah, because you said, like, Carter's kind of all his...
That surprised that his scar's gone. His scar's completely. In fact, he seems to have regained some of the facial function. His smile's no longer wonky.
Yay!
He just kind of looks at it. That catches his eye a bit more than the hair.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Wild stands and stretches. Let's go outside and just catch up.
Right. Yeah.
Wild puts his arm around you, like around the shoulder. Which I'll point out is a first. Wild doesn't tend to be that kind of a person normally unless he's taking the piss. And Yes, I am aware there is a height difference, Bryn. I am not talking that he physically picked Zolf up. I'm just meaning that, you know, there is an element of camaraderie to the body language. Should we leave it at that?
I didn't say anything.
So yeah, once we're outside, she's like, so, you died?
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That adds up.
Yeah. So, this place is on the back of a big bear.
Wild smiles.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And they helped us out by doing a resurrection ritual where I had to go and have a chat to your, I don't know, ghost, spirit, soul, something.
Ooh, what did I say?
Well, you were very annoying, I've got to say.
Sorry about that.
And pretty manipulative and quite forgetful, honestly. But, yeah, well, you know, you agreed to come back, and you... You said that the reason you came back was because I needed you.
Well, it takes a moment. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Well, it's still true. So, you know, that is a thing that exists. And yes.
Wild holds his hand out in basically to you, not in like a big elaborate gesture, just as a sort of like he lays it next to you in a way that he hasn't done previously.
Kind of awkwardly pat his hand.
Oh.
he sort of accepts that and then just says, yeah, we got this. We've got this.
Yeah,
we got this.
Yeah, let's go save the world, I suppose. Oh,
whoa,
actually,
whoa! Don't put yourself down. Let's save the world again.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. Actually, one thing I do need to mention is Mirik didn't make it.
Wild temporarily takes that phased out look that you may have seen Carter do when he was talking with Azu.
Yeah.
And he just sort of mentally leaves and will not respond until you sort of bring him back. He just sort of phases out at the moment.
By his choice and stuff. So, you know, same proposition.
I wouldn't worry.
No, I'm not worried. I just wanted to, in case you kind of wandered up to the kobolds and went, hey, where is Merrick? And then it was a big awkward conversation. I just thought I'd, you know, stop you putting your foot in it or something. You know, just keep going. Well, look, yeah, that.
No, it's okay. I understand. We should probably get inside. Carter will be waking up in a couple of minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. He seems to be a bit more mellow recently. So maybe you should.
That makes sense too. That makes sense too.
Oh, yes, okay, sorry. So Carter also died and came back, and Sassara also died and came back. So, I don't know, maybe you three will have a chat or something. You know, it's not every day somebody dies and isn't dead, so yeah, I don't know. Anyway, yeah, let's get back inside.
Before we do, I should let you know. It's an odd experience. I don't... How do I put it? I don't remember our conversation, but I remember what it meant, and I remember how it fits into the big picture. I don't... I'm not enjoying being at a loss for words. It's novel and quite frustrating.
Yeah, well, it's taken some getting used to on this side too. But yeah, look, you don't need to... I'm not expecting you to have an answer or anything. Just, look, take some time. Think about it. Just... It's okay. You don't have to say anything.
No, that's fine. Wild looks down at himself. I would say that, despite everything else, he might have a new, almost youthful complexion. His clothing is not necessarily in there the best and so on. He just goes, yeah, we should head inside. And then just quietly shakes his hand and just prestidigitates himself spotlessly.
Yes!
Clean.
Etc. Woo! Squeal!
Zolf doesn't say anything, but does a big grin behind his back.
And you can wipe the grin off your face, Solf. While says, without turning round.
Good to have you back, Wild.
Wild heads inside. I am now going to accelerate to basically dawn and people awaking, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
People awaken naturally, so does Sasra. There's no complications there. Sasra immediately asks for basically a bit of privacy with Skrark specifically, but then that lasts very little time, and immediately Sasra heads over to Sel and just kind of gives a little gesture to, like, have a speak.
Hey, buddy. You doing okay?
Sasra sort of looks up at you with a uncharacteristically calm grin. Sasra's always had an almost slightly manic edge when it comes
That's
to,
why
like,
they get on so well.
And everything.
Yeah.
Sasra just goes up and just gives Sel a hug.
Aww.
Just gives a hug.
Oh, hey, buddy. It's good to have you here. And Sel hugs back.
I am at this stage, unless anyone objects, going to want to pass by what is going to be an enormous number of cross conversations of just, so what happened to you? So what happened to you? So what happened to you? What happened to you? The catch-up phase, because in a normal game I would RP that, but it would take, you know, an episode.
Mm-hmm.
Unless anyone objects, I'd like to jump ahead to basically a large sit-down meal with everyone.
When Hamid finally gets to see Oscar again for the first time, he is just going to fling himself right like Oscar's shoulders and just give him the biggest massive hug. And that's quite a big jump. You know, he literally launches himself into the air to wrap Wild in the really large hug.
Wild hugs back and doesn't make any sarcastic comments about it. He looks amazing, by the way. He looks the best he's looked in a long time. Not, I would say, ungarish. Normally he has a tendency to be like, orange or purple, I can make that work.
And he can.
But he seems not muted so much as just a little less loud. I think it's like he's making less of a point. That's the best way I can describe it.
It's visible to your eye. Peacock quite so much.
Yeah, that's the best way to describe it. I'm going to jump ahead to the meal, which is effectively a breakfast, where in the bunkhouse, a meal is laid out for people. In terms of sort of foods that are laid out, they're a slightly odd combination of, like, quite heavy foods for a morning. We're talking, like, a big blood pudding or two, combined with a lot lighter fare, where it's, you know, more vegetable-based, a lot of raw veggies kicking around, things like that. And it is, to your eye, Lydia, although some of the constituent components are, you know, not necessarily the same, it's very reminiscent of some of the meals that you were having in the Americas.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the makeup of it, it's very reminiscent of that. And yeah, I will just say that everyone has a nice meal, just sits and talking and chatting.
Mm-hmm.
With that in mind, I'm now going to do the thing I normally do, where hand over and go, are there any RP moments that people are especially wanting? Everyone is now at a meal, eating and chatting, with one clarification, which is the kobolds just en masse. They don't necessarily appear to be over the moon, obviously, but they are engaging. They're not locked off or anything like that. It's hard to explain, but it's not a quiet, somber affair, but they're not, like, having a food fight. It's just comparatively straightforward.
I want to talk to everyone.
This is why I've put you in a big, big meal, is I can't RP
choice paralysis.
Everyone simultaneously.
Just knowing that we would all of our thoughts would get stuck in a door and you'd be able to skip it all.
Hey, if you want, we could just have you all sat there in pure silence. I'm okay with that.
No. Priority. Azu is going to sit next to Kiko. And Azu is going to ask if Kiko wants to go on, like, a nice walk around the town.
Kiko absolutely does immediately.
Yeah! Yay! Okay.
If there's anything you majorly want to RP with that, that's fair enough, and we can follow that conversation.
Yeah.
Similarly, Kiko's just happy to be just out, you know. For a start, having a walk. You were on a ship for ages, got marched to a major ritual. Like, walking around is still a novelty again.
Okay.
So yeah, Kiko's more than happy to do so.
Okay, so Azu and Kiko are on a walk. Azu is gonna go for holding Kiko's hand.
Yeah, Kiko's on board.
Yeah! Okay. Sorry, I've been on my own for a really long time at this point.
Oh, Ellen.
Okay,
lockdown got us all like hand holding.
Azu is going to say, so, turns out we really can die at any time.
Heavy start, Azu. Okay. Yeah, I guess. Although apparently it's not as big a deal as it used to be.
It still felt like quite a big deal.
I shouldn't joke, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. But then again, in my line of work, that's sort of the norm. I don't know. You learn to roll with the punches.
Yes, I've been trying to do that for a while.
What are you not saying, Azu?
I like you a lot.
Good. Kiko smiles good-naturedly.
Do you like me?
Kiko leans in for a kiss.
Yeah.
Do you accept it?
Yes.
Does so, and then he's like, I mean, yeah, obviously.
Okay. So, Sel gave me some advice before we went below decks that first time. And they said that, I'm not very good at this. I'm very sorry.
It's not like we're in a rush.
That's...
Why don't we take it slower? Why don't we find somewhere nice to have the conversation first?
Okay. Azu looks around. What does Azu
see? I'm in the mood for a park. How about you?
A park on the back of a bear. Yeah.
I mean, it'll be a story.
Yeah, all right.
I will jump to you easily find one. Settle down. Because it's comparatively early morning, people are still sort of like setting up market stalls, things like that. It's just very quiet and calm. Minor points to note, you're looking at a lot of potted plants rather than a lot of trees for obvious reasons, but yeah, it's very straightforward. Kiko seems to be deliberately giving you the space to assemble your thoughts,
mm-hmm.
and though paying attention, is clearly relishing the space and is just happy to just let you take your time.
Okay. Eventually, Azu says, but we've never actually said, okay, do you want to be my girlfriend, like, properly, like, officially, like a you know.
Kiko laughs good-naturedly. Yes.
Okay.
I would like to be your girlfriend, proper, officially, like, you know.
Okay. Good. I just wanted to check because one time I didn't check and that ended badly. Okay.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
All right. All good. I'm trying to say the things that I mean and not wait for things anymore. So,
in that case then, date time. We have some time. Let's go for a date. We've not gone on a date. As fun as sitting in a cargo bay is, I want to take you on a date. Let's go on a date.
Yes. Yeah, anywhere. Anything.
I'll be honest. I'm quite far from my usual, so you're going to have to give me a moment to think. Right. Kiko stands, sort of gesturing for you to come up.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely, yes.
Right. Close your eyes.
Azu closes her eyes.
Kiko... You can hear Kiko runs off for a little moment.
Oh, just leaves her! Oh my god! That's okay, Azu trusts her.
Okay. I will say it will be a couple of minutes where interspersed, like I'd say after 1 minute, you hear Kiko slightly distantly be like, it's all still fine. I'm still sawing it. Don't look. Try not to listen to. There's the sounds of activity.
Okay, Azu puts her hands over her ears as well and is grinning.
I would say just long enough for it to have almost started to lose its moment because, you know, life.
Mm-hmm.
Kiko comes over and says, right, okay, turn around.
as he turns around.
Set up in the garden. Well, yeah, garden is a better phrase for it, really. Set up in the garden are two simple chairs with a simple table. And what looks to be laid out on the table is a little pot of flowers.
Aww.
And what appears to be some kind of board game.
Oh. What's that?
I never told you because it's not the coolest thing. But I'd really like to play chess with you, like a lot.
Ooh, I'm really bad at chess. Okay.
You also will notice for free that it's clear that Kiko had a little bit of help from some local stall holders who can't help but sort of look and be like, oh. But yeah, what Kiko is pushing for is Kiko genuinely wants to just sit in a park with you, play a game of chess, chat, and he'll occasionally get up to a stall holder and get some drinks and then sit back down and so on. That's all Kiko wants.
Getting smashed just after dawn. Love it. Best date ever.
At which point, then, I will jump to anyone else have any RP requests during your downtime?
Sel might say to Barnes, how does it feel to be back in your body, then? And follow it up with, it suits you.
Ooh!
They're just a lot less subtle and awkward about these things. A bit older.
Barnes goes uncharacteristically awkward.
Purple, I'm hoping.
Receptive, but a little bit like... thank you. I'm glad you're in your body. You didn't leave.
No. But I could be in a different one, like, you know, wings.
No, you wouldn't want to. Why would you want to? No.
I do it quite a lot. It's flying is great. I really recommend it.
You should teach me
breathing underwater
sometime.
Oh, I would totally be up for that. Yes.
Yeah. Underwater. Sure. So we'll go underwater then.
Yeah, that's one word for it. Yep.
Right. Okay. That's a date then.
We can cut the line that there's just a different approach.
For what it's worth, Barnes is interested but utterly blindsided. just completely blindsided.
Someone's got to react to the fact that you have not, but like, it has not been subtle about the swashbuckler with his chest out this entire time.
Oh yeah. Barnes is, again, I'm going to leave that conversation and return to it because it's mostly just Barnes proceeding to put both his feet and his hands in his mouth and just go, oh,
like a small inwards shrinking hedgehog.
There's a pirate.
I will also say that anyone who is at that meal will just see him go to pieces for free. No insight checks. You've just watched him sort of doing his standard sitting there
Hammett
going, you know,
notices.
I'm used to being in command. Hello.
Yeah, that definitely gets a smirk out of Zulf.
Zulf plays it cooler than I tend to. Except their charisma is relatively low, but their intelligence and their ability to bluff extremely high. So come-ons, pick-up lines that they had time to think about, very good, very good.
So basically what I'm hearing is it's just like, right, I made an offer, Barnes seemed receptive, we'll go to contingency 6F.
Yep.
I've got some buckles that need swashing.
Very much so.
Anyone else want to chase any RP before I do anything other than just let you chill for a moment?
I'm just being a nosy gossip right now, but everyone's coupling up, and I want to know if Zulf and Wild are acting any differently at this big group breakfast around each other after their early morning conversation.
I would say, give me an insight check, actually.
I assume you mean sense motive rather than insight, since insight
is a 5e.
Oh, gosh,
yes. Sorry, I've been playing 5th ed again.
In 5th ed, boy.
16.
You notice there's definitely some element of communication or coordination or something between Sasra, Wild, and Carter. You'll see Wild is in a separate conversation to Carter, and then when Wild laughs, a smirk just passes across Carter's face in a different conversation.
Interesting.
It doesn't appear to be like there is a separate conversation happening or anything like that, but you see that they seem to be gently pinging off one another's emotions or something like that. It's hard to place. It's subtle. In terms of how Wild is with Zolf, less affected is how I would describe it. Wild's always been more informal around Zolf than others, but even then, in general, Wild just seems less affected. And also seems to be... Wild has a tendency, from your experience, to either Wild is the conversation, or Wild is not in this conversation. They tend to be the way Wild works. And he seems to be taking a back seat a lot more. Not in a, like, willfully silent way, but he seems to ask a question and then wait for an answer. It's difficult to separate out from your perspective how much of this is tied to Zolf and how much of this is different stuff. But yeah, he just seems a little bit more measured is the best way I can describe it.
And for Zolf's part, just a lot more comfortable. You haven't seen him this, like, comfortable and happy in a long time.
Yay!
Okay, so for my own edification, because something seems to have happened here and I want to be clear on what it is. Are Zolf and Wild now a couple?
That's a good question, Helen.
I don't know if the characters know yet.
I think answer you from Wild. Wild does not know.
Yeah.
in the interest of, like, helping to clear some things up, it's worth me mentioning it's not a scripted thing. It's something that is being discovered in real time.
Okay.
So I would say it's not off the cards, but similarly, it's not something that's baked in either.
Yeah, I would definitely say, like, in the interest of transparency, like, where I'm at and where I think Zolf is at is oscillating between, like, platonic life partners and romantic life partners or something in between. Like, there's something, like, there is a deep and meaningful relationship here, and let's work out what it is.
Okay.
That's very fair.
Yeah, the story's not told. Let's see. Okay. And I'd love to say it will be this. I actually don't know. This is where the medium kind of plays its strength a little bit. Is this isn't, well, when I wrote the second film, I'll find out.
I just wanted to see.
No, you're right to ask.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be honest. We need a break anyway. Yeah. This feels like a natural breaking point as we discuss the nature of human pairing in general.
Yeah. Performance, you know, and the self and relation to one another. Is one ever not performing?
Give me a second. I'll open my mask cabinet and we can start going through this, okay? And welcome back. So I think we've all come to a universal clarification on the entire nature of the human condition. Agreed? Before we go any further?
Oh yeah, totally.
I mean, once you think about it, it's so obvious that there's not really any need to restate it either.
I don't think we need to.
I'm sorry for all the swearing, which means we can't air it. That was my bad.
Well, yeah, no.
But I don't regret it.
It's sad, but yeah, no, you know what? It was a necessary step in the process, but we reached a destination, and that's important. Fabulous. Well, with that under our belts, I'm going to return to the breakfast scene and say, anyone have anything further they wish to bring up?
So, Hamid is really enjoying getting to hang out with the kobolds. Like, with the conversations that have happened, with the experiences they've all gone through in the past few days, it feels, to Hamid at least, like, you know, a huge part of the barrier that was between them has dissolved and dropped away a bit. And he now feels like he can actually
seems to be the case.
Start interacting with them in a relaxed sort of way. So he will just be chatting to the kobolds at breakfast, basically. And one of the things that came up a few episodes back, but he will now be able to start pursuing, is to talk to the kobolds about, you know, if they actually like the clothes he made for them, if they want to stop wearing them, or if they want adjustments to them that he can start working on over the next few days while the ship is being repaired.
That actually brings up an interesting point, which is that you notice that Sassara seems to have shed a number of layers. And looking around, so have Wild and Carter. I don't mean that they're like, haha, shirtless, hello. But I just mean
they're
that,
still
like,
bombs.
Where before, because you're in a cold area and endure elements will have worn off over the night, like, whereas everyone would be like, extra layers, you know, like winter in a remote place where you're not necessarily got the heating going yet, that kind of, like, you wear the extra layers and so on. Wild, Carter and Sassara are all very comfy in clothing that you would have expected would be far too thin for like this ambient temperature. There is a fire. They seem to have been deliberately arranging themselves not necessarily close to
it.
But in terms of the rest of the kobold, I would say they are now no longer watching what they are saying. They are neither making a big attempt to like bring you into
the fold.
Of course, yeah. All that's happening is they've stopped being super like stonewally with you.
Yeah.
Where it's been previously, it's been like, "What's your favorite food?" And they'll be like, "Just look at you," or be like, "Insisting." Like, there's actual like, "Well, I kind of like this one, but this person likes this one." Like, there's actual
just
conversation.
The ability to have normal conversations with them.
But I would say that it's sort of being taken as read as, "We're not going to talk about the fact that things were weird earlier." I don't know how else to put it. It's just
Hammond
like,
is not addressing that.
We'll pretend that's not going to happen. Yeah. No, that didn't happen. What I would say is Skrark takes the opportunity while everyone's occupied to go over to Zolf and just gives a very quick and muttered apology for losing it yesterday, to Zolf specifically.
Don't worry about it, mate. I'm sorry too.
Yep.
Right. Don't worry about it.
Thanks.
Give them a pat on the shoulder, like a friendly camaraderie. That's a weird word. A friendly pat on the shoulder.
It's accepted in the same manner, and then Skrark kind of awkwardly heads back because that's not a conversation Skrark necessarily wants, but felt needed to be said.
Hammond would like to spend, you know, sufficient time at the breakfast talking to Natan, because Natan and Mick were quite close in terms of kobolds. Those two were pretty close, and just, you know, like, just letting Natan talk about whatever Natan wants to talk about, really, and just being there for them in case. Not like making a point of it, just making sure to be, you know, to be around and friendly and chatting to Natan.
It seems to be a lot of discussions of, it's a lot of reminiscing in a sort of, in a positive light, and a lot of, it ends up deteriorating into an anecdote of one particular round of Hide the Fang recently, which gets the other kobolds involved, where Merc basically just tried to hide it in the actual engine. Yeah. And it was a whole thing.
This is a point where Cell overhears and is just like, "And the rattling! The rattling you would not believe!" And it's...
So it deteriorates into a little bit of a good nature thing of, Merc was always the one who took Hide the Fang too far. Merc was the one who lost the first fang by going, and chucking it over the side. Like, that's just... And that's a lot of the conversation. It's just like, Merc was always the one who had to take the joke just that little bit too far, and it becomes a lot of reminiscence in that regard.
Yeah, Hammond is just there and present and participating in that, basically.
Yeah, it's not a thing in a way that we recognise as being a deal, like a conquered barrier, let's say. Anything else in terms of the RP side that people wish to bring up?
Not really RP, but one really quick thing is, like, sitting between Wild and Earhart, and I'm going to start chatting to Earhart about, like, plans, like, what next? We need to get the ship fixed up, you know, and just probably carrying that on through the day, just, you know, getting onto first mate-ly things.
Yeah, I would say that, broadly speaking, both of them are amenable to talking about it. They both agree today's not the day to start on that, for obvious reasons. And they both agree that, realistically, they're going to have a conversation with whoever is, like, in charge here, because that is going to require an element of, like, we could do with some resources, how do we make that happen, what can we provide, etc., etc. But bearing in mind, it is worth me drawing attention to, you have had astonishingly little interaction with regards to, like, you've more or less been left to your own devices in the bunk house by this point, because we have to remember that time's gone a little bit fuzzy and Azu and Kiko were, like, off in the actual city. The bunk house has been very much just left to its own devices up to this point, so as a result, it's not like there has been someone checking in. It's mostly been, like, left to you. So I would say that, yeah, that this conversation's happening where everyone's like, yeah, we should probably, like, make contact now beyond our immediate saving of a crisis. But no one seems particularly keen to do anything other than just be in each other's company for a while. In that case, does anyone have an issue with me accelerating to, say, an evening meal where we're rejoining people?
Sure.
Then I would like to check in with one thing with you, Helen.
Yeah.
Which is, Kiko, basically, you complete the game. Can I get, because it's chess, a raw intelligence check, I guess?
What does that mean? Do I roll and then add my int modifier?
Yep.
Yes.
All right. Okay, that's not bad. It's 14.
Can you give me a sense motive check, please?
That's 24.
Two things happen. One, you win the game. The second thing is, for a moment, you're like, did Kiko throw the game? Is this a whole thing? And you can see that despite herself, Kiko's just a little bit miffed. And the second game goes a lot heavier in Kiko's favour. And Kiko very much hasn't been throwing the game so much as botched the first one and plays to win the second one. Turns out Kiko has a real, real competitive streak that you happen to trigger, which is an interesting one to discover.
Nice.
Once the game's played, though, Kiko offers if there's anything that you would like to do. It's just that Kiko had kind of been saving that as a thing to do. You have the rest of the day till the evening meal.
In which case, Azu would like to do some cloud spotting.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it might be a bit cold, but she's got that big coat, so it's probably fine.
And she can always give me a perception check, please.
A perception check, yes.
Mm-hmm.
22.
One thing that you notice is there's clearly some slight oddness with the weather. Not like, oh no, goodness, ominous. It's just that the cloud cover immediately overhead seems continuously lesser than the cloud cover if you're looking out further to the horizon. It seems like you're in an area of continual, like, calm or slightly more balmy rather than the surrounding region.
Okay. As we'll probably point that out to Kiko. That's, unless Kiko has some observations on that.
No, it was just an interesting little story note, which I'm like, yeah, that would be a thing that you would notice.
Okay. And then just like a nice...
I feel like I'm on a chat show. What's a good date?
Yeah.
But no, it's a good date for Azu.
Yep.
But also, like, it's a unfamiliar...
Yeah.
Town and all that.
It's actually a surprisingly difficult one, which is why I'm like, Helen, solve this for me.
Yeah. She's also going to suggest that they go shopping.
Okay, I'm not going to RP it. I'm going to jump to the meal then. I'll say that that takes a decent amount of time. You find one oddity to do with the market, which Kiko warns you, having just set that initial date up, which is there doesn't really seem to be much in the way of monetary exchange. It seems to be a... closer to a softer barter culture.
Ooh.
Where it is, but it is not a heavily codified one, so it's not like hard haggling or anything like that, but they don't really seem to do much in the way of like currency exchange. Also, you note that most of the people don't want to try and barter, like exchange things with you. They mostly are just like, yeah, that's fine, as long as you're not trying to get anything ridiculous. It's like, if you're just saying, oh, you know, I could do with some food, you'll get people congenially being like, yeah, here you go, that's fine.
As he's just going to break the marble economy.
Just completely. You know what, actually? Do you try to trade marbles for stuff?
Yeah.
People are really interested in them.
Yay!
Because
marbles
they're
are just
actually,
very smooth rocks.
Yeah, because I was going to say, these are manufactured marbles, aren't they? They're not...
Well, it's up to you. Depends what kind of marbles they sell in Japan.
Yeah, but you bought them in Japan, so you're looking at mostly... They're mostly going to be closer to either ball bearings or, you know, like glass swirl type stuff.
Yeah, I was thinking like the nice glass swirl ones.
So as a result, that seems to be enough for you to sort of barter for the basic stuff because, yeah, the people are just like, what's it for?
And I was like, for fun.
Yeah, all right.
As he demonstrates with some marbles how you play a game of marbles.
I say you may end up, as part of your day, accidentally teaching an increasing crowd of people how to play marbles.
Yes.
Make them build marble runs. Do marble racing. Everyone's favourite lockdown sport.
But yeah, the marbles seem to be going down well. They just seem to be a novelty that people haven't seen before. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Yeah, all right.
Cool.
In which case, then, I'm going to jump to the evening meal.
All right.
Which is, I'm going to say people have had enough time to sort of have side conversations and side chatter and so on. But I would say that someone did come towards the bunkhouse and basically provide what is effectively like a set of baskets for some more food for everyone.
Aww.
But they left not in a like deliberately running away vibe, but more like just kind of leaving you to it. But I would say that as the evening meal starts to get sort of set up and underway, Sora returns to the front door and sort of knocks politely and then waits.
Hamid will open it if no one else does first.
Sure. Is everyone feeling better? Has everyone acclimatized?
Yes, I believe so. Thank you so much for your assistance and your help and for giving us this space and this time. Would you like to come in and share the meal with us?
I would not intrude so soon after everything that's happened. I would like to invite some of you to meet with a council of ours for on the next day, so that we can.
Of course, that would be yes.
Discuss. We do not wish to intrude, but we should begin a discourse.
Indeed, and we probably have lots to tell each other, and we stand ready to repay any debt of service that we've incurred, obviously. But we yes, we're very appreciative of everything you've done for us.
Of course. Might I ask a very, very small favour? I do not wish to intrude.
Of course, anything.
Does Azu have any further marbles? My daughter would be... my daughter would be thrilled to receive one.
She's got so many marbles.
Yes, she probably can have the marbles for a whole town.
I think she probably has enough. Azu?
Yeah, yes, hi, yes. Oh, hello.
Yes, I was wondering if it would not be an imposition that I might borrow one of your marbles that my daughter might play.
Oh, no, you can have as many as you like. and, yes, how many?
How many is a good number of marbles?
Oh! Azu reaches into her bag and just brings out just like a handful, just like, here?
Thank you. We shall return these to you tomorrow, but my daughter was very interested.
Good. And I didn't really have a chance to say thank you, and what you can... So, I thought I was a good healer, but I've never been able to bring anyone back from the dead, and I thought maybe we're on a sort of quest. But when I come back, maybe I could learn?
Of course. I would warn you, it's not... It is... we will discuss it tomorrow. It is complex.
Yes, I imagine so. It's a quite a big spell, and big spells require big learning.
Oh, I love Azu.
Sora sort of steps back and goes, I thank you for your time, and I wish you all a good rest.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Of course. If you have any need, if you see the house across there, that is where me and my daughter live. And Sora just heads off, looking at the marbles a little confusedly. I'm sure that she'll have to figure it out with her daughter in terms of how the game works, but, you know, c'est la vie. In terms, then, of time, does anyone have an issue with me jumping ahead to this meeting the next morning?
No, sounds good.
Okay. In which case, then, early in the morning, after food, Sora arrives to show people through to this meeting. And is there any one of you who would be choosing not to be there as a thing?
I would just be making absolutely sure that Earhart is there, because she is still the captain and we still are her crew. So she's technically in charge.
Yeah. Earhart obviously is going to be there. Basically, you get the impression that eventually everyone's like, should we all go? Should we all go? Yeah, we should probably. Should we? Yeah, we're going to. I don't know. Should we? No, yeah? No, yeah? And then everyone just goes. In which case, then, yeah, there's a crowd heading through the town. And much as it was when you first arrived, because you've not all necessarily been out all over the place, Azu is recognised. And so is Kiko, because they've been out more, basically. But broadly speaking, you draw the same kind of attention that you drew when you first arrived, which is, you know, people stepping out of the way. You're interesting, but you're not, like, the most amazing thing that anyone's ever seen, because you're really not. We're on the back of a bear, people. But, yeah, heading through the town, you head through to what feels like a slightly denser area in terms of, like, building on top of itself a little bit. And then you head through to what is a larger conical-shaped structure. It is still sort of wood, looks to be maybe tarred wood, given the temperatures and things like that. But it is, yeah, it's broadly conical in nature, whereas everything else has been sort of a little bit more a little bit more boxy and on top of one another. This one's, again, in its own little bit of a space, but not with the same kind of square that the resurrection area was. But it seems to stand alone, at least, as a structure. Yeah, you are led to the front by Sura, who gestures for you to head inside. You get the impression, just from sort of design and layout, that whereas the resurrection area was a bit more functional, this one feels a little bit more ceremonial, insofar as, you know, there are furs across the door. There is not a large wooden door. There is iconography on the exterior of the cone that you haven't been seeing all over the place. Seems to be various depictions of your guess would be the same bear. So, like, sometimes it's like laughing, greeting the sun, angry, whatever, but it seems to be just, there doesn't seem to be a deliberate pattern. It seems to be a random, almost branding all over the cone structure of various depictions of a bear in various poses, forms, actions, or whatever. And Sora gestures for you to head inside. Okay. I'm assuming everyone does so.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously it takes a while. There's like 30 of us.
If the room's big enough to fit us.
It is, but what I would say is it's going to be a little bit close. But so heading inside, there's no dividing areas within this. It is a large, like, coned area, which has a what appears to be, for the first time, it has a sort of step down. You know, I was saying that there's sort of these layers of timbers that make out the groundwork of the city or town. Mm-hmm. You head down what appears to be like a few steps, let's say. So it almost like you're heading down into a conversation pit. To the first time that actually since you've been at the town, you seem to be stood upon the actual bear's back. The fur has been trimmed low, so it's not like enormous huge high stalks where you can't see one another. It appears to have been trimmed much lower, but yeah, you head
down. Got to mow the bear again.
let's say 10 steps or so, to the point where it's a decent step down because you are walking down through like a timber layer, but you are upon the actual living animal and you can feel the warmth of it underneath, coming up through the just coming up you through your feet.
Wow.
And there are four people sat sort of shoulder to shoulder at the far end of the conical structure. They all appear to be dressed in similar garb, so you're talking large amounts of sort of feather, heavier cloaks, that kind of thing, and they are all sat at the opposite end of the cone, sort of gesturing for you to take a seat. In terms of ages and so on, three of them are significantly older, like heavily elderly, much shrunken in on themselves, very wizened faces and so on. One of them appears to be very young, maybe 16, maybe 17.
Wow.
But in the same kind of regalia. And then Sora takes a place next to the youngest one. And Sora seems to be a bit more of the middle ground between this age range.
Yeah.
And they invite you to sit. And Sora, before sitting, says, I would like to call everyone to this place that we might discuss what happens now, if that is amenable to all. Sora sits, and then the youngest representative stands, takes a deep breath, and then we'll find out what they say next week. Like, nah, probably not a big deal. Maybe they're going to sneeze, I don't know.
Excellent, okay, fine. Fine, whatever.
Classic Alex.
Yeah. Maybe if you spent less time having meaningful conversations with one another, I could have got there, but here we are. What's the lesson here, right?
Mm. All right, well we don't have to wait a week, just the listeners do. So, bye!
Bye!
Rusty Quill Gaming is a podcast distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 international license. Today's episode was directed by Alexander J. Newell and produced by Hannah Preisinger. To subscribe, buy merchandise, or join our Patreon, visit rustyquill.com. Rate and review us online, tweet us at @TheRustyQuill, visit us on Facebook, or email us via mail@rustyquill.com. Join our community on the Discord or via Reddit at r/rustyquill. Thanks for listening. One day, me and you, Helen, have to share what tune's going through our heads when we do our little dances.
It's the
It's the Hobbit tune. Where it goes da 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 da. That's the one that automatically. That's like elevator music in my head.
Nice. And you, you're a woman of class and distinction. Should we leave it at that?
I didn't say anything.
And Wilde steps outside, and I'm going to do an unusual thing, which is a camera pan that I don't often do, to help address a slight retcon from Alex. Leaving his shackles on the bedside table beside the bed, because there's something I need to clarify, which is, and I've just got a retcon this, those must have been removed prior to...
We took them off. We literally we explicitly addressed this.
Did we make
sure
to address
it? We put them in Zolf's bag of holding.
We had to in order to do the preserve body spell.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Great. Then that's already addressed. I don't need to retcon nothing.
No, you
sorted it. I'm a flawless genius. I'm a flawless genius with no errors in continuity ever.
In fact, you've never edited this show. Not a single word has ever needed to be cut out
or changed. So all of that was a bait and switch, because what I do is I rather like amateurishly pan the camera to an empty bedside table and then quickly pan it back across to the leaving people.
Yeah, it's more of a handy cam of the camera like running off. It's like, oh,